Welcome to the Every Nation New Jersey podcast. Every Nation exists to help people know God, grow together, discover purpose, and make a difference in New Jersey and beyond. Enjoy the talk. We're going to be in Luke chapter 15, and in it, I'm sure many of you, even if you're new to the faith, you've heard the story of the prodigal son. Jesus, in chapter 15, brace yourself, we're going to read an entire chapter of the Bible. And in it, though, Jesus is going to give a trilogy. He's going to give us three stories, one after the other after the other, but really it's the same message in all three. He's going to tell three parables, and just if you don't know what a parable means, para, it means alongside, and bole means to throw. And so what Jesus does is he throws a truth beside a story. And so we're going to be able to draw one truth from these three stories because Jesus is trying to drive this point home to us. And let me just start in Luke chapter 15, verses 1 and 2, and we'll talk a little bit. It says this, verse 1 of chapter 15, it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all," get this, "drawing near to him," him being Jesus. "And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" And so in order for you to understand the meaning behind these three parables, you've got to get these first two verses. Because in this, we're realizing that Jesus is trying to communicate there's two types of people in the audience: tax collectors and sinners, and Pharisees and scribes. Really like the same groups of people, like two different groups, just but given different names. And so let me talk to you about the tax collectors and sinners. So don't think IRS person, that type of thing, but just think someone who's a mafia, a guy, a blackmailer, one that will extort money at the expense of human flourishing and human life. That's a tax collector. And then sinners. So sinners, these are people that they're just identified by their sin. In other words, they got a rep. They got a reputation. Oh, that girl, that guy, you want to stay away from them because they're promiscuous, they're whatever, you know, you fill in the blank. But can I tell you this is, I began ministry in Austin, Texas. And I tell you what, I much prefer doing ministry up here in the Northeast than in the South. See, because people kind of, or at least are self-aware and honest where they're at in life. So I love it. Like down South, everybody's a Christian. And so you got no starting point. Like if you don't know you're sick, then you don't know you need the great physician. Not the same up here in Northeast. And up in New York and in New Jersey, like, oh yeah, I'm a sinner. Yeah, man. Bro, love me. I had me a good time last night. And all that kind of, like, they just don't, this is who I am, Pastor. Deal with it. And But the reason why I'd much prefer to work with tax collectors and sinners is because here's what I know. Eventually, their sin is going to beat the hell out of them. And then they will be looking for answers. Because here's the promise. Like sin, it promises you freedom, doesn't it? Like, have you ever heard of pastor's kids kind of lose their mind for a little bit? Not my pastor's kid. But sometimes pastor's kids, because they're brought up under all these rules and regulations, because why? Because your kid, you're going to make me look bad if you sin or you miss it or something like that. So there's all this pressure under them. And then the kids get out of that household, and you know what they do? Lose their minds. And so they throw off all these restraints and they're like, I'm free, nobody can stop me. Boom, porn, partying, alcohol, drugs. And it feels like freedom for a little while. And then freedom always turns in to slavery or bondage, because it began with nobody can stop me. And it ends with nobody can stop me, right? And that's how it ends. And so so we see the tax collectors and sinners. And here's, when we speak today, here's what I want you to know. In this room, there's always going to be tax collectors and sinners. And if there's not, we're not doing our job. And we're beginning to die as a church, all right? I'll tell you this, is I know that there's some people in this room right now that, in fact, I've been trying to work with them on their testimony. And the best we could weave it down is to PG-13. And so we're trying to get it there. And like, and then I had to tell this person, promise me you'll never share the exact, like the details of your testimony unless we're in all men's ministry and I have to give them the sign a waiver that this is like, we can't be held liable. All right. And so those people are in here because why? But the sin had beaten them up and then they were looking for answers. And then the other group of people are Pharisees and scribes. And so here's what you need to know. Pharisees get a real bad rap and kind of mostly they've earned most of it. But you know, Pharisees, they started off with a great motivation. The term Pharisee, it means separate ones. Is these men, they saw people living the moderately religious life and they said, not us. We're going to follow all the way. They're going to go all in with God. And they said, we're going to live separate lives. We're going to live over and above, be holy and consecrated unto God. Started off right, but then somewhere along the way, they forgot the motivation of their heart was to be near to God. And it got off, and it began to mutate into something ugly, empty, and hollow. So Valentine's Day was this past week. How many guys did good? Any show of hands? Okay, good, man. My fellas did all right. So Susan, she was away this week, so I got off easy, fellas. But I've known over the years, I've researched my wife to know, how many know, fellas, like your girl, she's not cookie cutter and you just can't, you know, figure out, okay, this is what you get, flowers, chocolate, cart, like this or that. Like you got to study your girl and find out, hey, what stirs the affections of her heart? And so I had to learn my girl. And so here's what I know for ours. Like fellas, for me to cook a meal for my wife at home, she ain't liking that. It's fine dining for my girl. All right, it's got to be a nice restaurant, and then that's good. For many of you, flowers would stir your girl's affections of her heart. Not my girl. Like, there better be a present with those flowers. So presence is what stirs my girl's, like, affections in that. And then, and you can tell why now, dancing is not my girl's, like, kind of, like, good idea. Nor, like going to a movie. She doesn't like movies. But what I did learn is she loves the front porch. And if we can get a little fire going and a little rosé, and if that sounds offensive to you this morning, the name of the rosé is Whispering Angel, so it's biblical, all right? And if I can get, I got those threes going, you know what I know, fellas? Look at me in my face. It's going to go good for me, all right? Home run. And so follow me. Restaurant, present, porch. And it goes good for me. Now, if I do that the next day, hey, baby, restaurant, present, porch. It might still go good for me, but it might be like, oh, that's a little weird, 2 days in a row, right? Then the next day, restaurant, present, porch. And the next day, restaurant, present, porch. Like, not only am I going to be broke, but how many know after a while, doesn't that start to suck the meaning and the life out of everything that takes place? And suddenly, what was once life-giving becomes hollow and empty routine. And what I've just described to you is many Christians' lives and their relationship with God. What started off vibrant and you're pursuing God comes into going through the motions, and it becomes empty, hollow, and dry. And here's what happens. When we start to get caught up in religion and we lose the relationship of God, our hearts start to grow hard. They start to grow hard and cold. And I'm just going to give you a little diagnostic for a Pharisee, for the heart of a Pharisee. It starts off, they start off as a convert, and it's good. And then they jump into church, and they become contributors. And they're starting to serve and add. And then after a little while, though, it backs off, and they become a consumer. And then after a consumer, they'll really sit back, and then they become the critic. And start saying everything that's wrong in the church and with everybody else. They're so aware of what's wrong with everyone else and blind to what's going on in their own heart. And that's the Pharisee. And can I tell you, I resonate with the sinner. In times in my life I'm not proud of, I resonate with the Pharisee. Like, I'll tell you this one. So we pray once a week for this church, for you. We have a prayer call, and we spend a half hour just in prayer for our church, and there's a prayer call line, all right, that we dial in, and there's a passcode, and we start praying at 7:45 in the morning, and so I'm on there, and I'm waiting, and they have this god-awful music that they make you wait to, and so I'm like, and then after, like, it progresses more and more, and I'm like, where's the team? And then I start having this dialogue with the Lord in my head. I'm like, but God, where are they? Am I the only righteous man that can forego sleep so that I can intercede for God's people, right? And this is, I'm not written, this is going through my head until I realized I dialed the wrong passcode and God's real people were already on the line praying, wondering where their fearless leader was, all right? And so, but that is, and listen, we can giggle and all that, but that was there. And I'm not proud of that, and it's an ugly part of my heart that God's dealing with, along with the tax collector and sinner part of my life. And so I need to be on guard for that one. And so the Pharisees are upset because these sinners are drawing near to Jesus. Now, I'm totally going to hijack a story from, there's a pastor, at Matt Chandler's his name, Dom. I turned Dom on to him. Please don't listen to him because I steal all his material all the time. And so, but Matt Chandler, he tells the story as a young Christian man in college, and he's attending college, and there's a young woman there she's a single mom, she's got a little bit of a checkered past, but once again, sin will beat the mess out of you, and it'll keep you searching for answers. And so this girl, her name was Kimberly, and she was searching for answers. And so Matt Chandler thought, this is a great idea. I'll invite her to this Christian conference they're doing just like 60 miles down the road. And so he invites her to come, and she says yes, and they come. And then he gets there, and he's like, oh no, this is a True Love Waits rally. And so what that is that that women are to keep themselves before they're married, before they have sex. And so this pastor gets up and starts banging and beating the drum about how sin, or it's sinful to have premarital sex, and banging this drum. And then he grabs a rose and he says, look at this. And it's this pristine, this delicate rose. And he throws it out into the crowd. And he says, here, smell it and handle it. And pass it to the next person, and smell it, and handle it, and pass it to the next person, until he says, where's my rose? And he gets the rose, and by the time, you know, 500 people have handled the rose, it's just beaten to a mess. And he says this, who would want this rose? And so, do you know what that message is to that little girl, Kimberly? Oh, it wasn't the gospel, I'll tell you that. It was this, that God doesn't want someone like me. And as Matt Chandler said, there's everything he could do within himself not to go, Jesus wants the rose. Jesus wants the rose. That's who wants it. And that is the gospel of Jesus Christ, that Jesus wants sinners. And I hate to let you in on this. We're all sinners. Some of us just dress it up a little better than others. All right? The Bible's clear. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And so Jesus is going to tell this trilogy, and he's going to jump in, and he's going to do what many of you parents have done. Lauren, I don't know if you've done this, but you tell a story because you're trying to manipulate your kid into doing what they want. And so never. So this is what Jesus is going to do. I'm going to tell you a little story, and it's going to begin to highlight both the sinner and the tax collector in the story. So in Luke chapter 15, verses 3 through 7, it says this. So he told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one, you need to pay attention to that. So in other words, the shepherd, he's taking responsibility. I've lost this one. In Genesis chapter 4, Cain asked God, am I my brother's keeper? And you know the answer to that, right? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And it says, and if he has lost one of them, does he not leave the 99 in the open country, and he goes after the one? He goes after that is lost until he finds it. And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost. Now listen, the response to the story would be, well, of course they celebrated. Sheep are expensive, and if you lose the sheep, the shepherd has to pay for that. And so they're like, absolutely, you're going to party and celebrate doing that. He says in verse 7, just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who needs no repentance. And so I want you to feel this, that in the heavens, that there's joy when a repentant sinner comes back to God. There's joy in heaven. I'm going to give you a different parable. This is the parable of the lost dog. His name is Oreo. Okay, I think we have a picture of Oreo. This is Oreo here. So he's a brown, it's supposed to be Cocker Spaniel. He is adorable looking, but don't let it fool you. He's evil. He was a bad dog. All right. And so we didn't get along that well. And so anyways, Oreo, I let Oreo outside and I shut the door, and maybe or maybe not, I might have forgotten that I let him out. And so that dog's out there for God knows how long until my kids ask me, hey, Dad, where's Oreo? I'm like, oh, my gosh. And so did I mention I've been punched in the head a lot when I played in the National Hockey League? I think I've been concussed 14 times. That's why when I tell the same story over the time, it's new to me. So anyways, hope you guys are good with that. And so Oreo is outside. And so I don't know what to do, where to begin. We're scouring the neighborhood. I still don't know what to do. And then someone in my family's like, hey, we should call the police department. So we call the police department, let them know a little brown Cocker Spaniel, we lost our dog. We don't know what to do, but we're just doing anything we can do. And from either God's curse to me or whatever, but somehow someone calls the police department, we found this brown dog. Boom, they make the connection. I drive like 3 miles down the road, and I knock on the door, miss, I heard you have my brown Cocker Spaniel. I promise you, I'm not exaggerating. This dog got a bath, he got groomed. I mean, he's just, and as God is my witness, there are 4 other female dogs behind him, and he's just like living large. He's like, the dog's like, I don't know this person, I don't know, right? And so we get the dog back. But here's a kind of the big idea is this is, man, I didn't know what to do, but I tell you what I wasn't gonna do, we weren't gonna do nothing. Like, I love Pastor Ron Lewis, my pastor says, I'll do anything but nothing. And so we just began to do whatever we could. Why? Because the dog was lost, and that's a dog. And so how much more for lost people that God's put in our life? Because think about this. Remember, we talk about we don't want to just be moderately concerned Christians, right? If hell is real and salvation exists, how could we do nothing? And I'm not trying to guilt anybody. I'm just trying to get us out of this funky middle area, and let's just be all in with God, all right? And so he goes on, and he's going to tell the parable of the lost coin, and that starts in verse 8. And so Jesus says this, or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp? For the record, this silver coin, it's one day's wage. So it's not a ton, but it's significant, all right? And so it says, does she not light a lamp and sweep the house and, here's the word, seek diligently until she finds it? In other words, the girl is OCD. She's going to lose her mind, just rip everything out until she finds this coin that was lost. And instead of verse 9, and when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I have lost. Of course you rejoice over that thing. That's what the crowd would be saying. Of course she would rejoice. Verse 10, just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Now we've moved from the heavens, now we've moved to the angels, that when a repentant sinner returns, when someone lost is found, that we see that the angels are overcome with joy. I'm going to give you a little bit different parable. This is the parable of the lost earring. So in my house, and if you've been married long enough, you realize this happens. Like, I'm on my third wedding band. My wife has had hers redone, I don't even want to know how many times, all right? And so there's that, and we've lost one pair of diamond stud earrings that fell into the garbage disposal, and it went home to be with the Lord, okay? And so we're on our, like, second pair of those until my wife was in a panic. She's like, honey, I can't find my one diamond stud earring, and I'm like, okay, and so we're going to look, and so this is going to cost me another set of earrings, so I'm seeking diligently. So I'm down, we got the iPhone, the light in the bathroom, looking everywhere, and trying to find that, went through the garbage, all that stuff, until my wife goes, I think it fell down the sink. And now, if I could shoot you straight, I was like, I am not mechanical. I bluff my way through everything, and so I'm like, oh no, she's going to want me to take the sink apart and see if it's in there. And so I'm like trying to say, baby, it wouldn't fit in there. It won't work. And she's like, honey, I think it fell in the sink. And so I went in and it's got this little S pipe like this. And I'm like, oh, Lord Jesus, I'm praying in tongues trying to get this thing. And I get this thing done and I want to show my wife. I'm like, baby, see, it's not in the sink. Clunk. And then I think we have a picture of it somewhere. We have a picture of that earring and it falls right into my hand. And there it is. And fellas, look at me in my face on this one. When my girl saw that I found that thing, it was like I invented fire, right? Like this girl, I'm like, if you could bottle that look up, I would run through a wall or do anything to see that look. And you know what? That look, that's how the angels look when one repentant sinner comes to God, returns to God. And so, and then lastly, he's going to get into the one we all know, and that's this, the prodigal son. And before we read it, I want to highlight something. There's two sons in this story, but here's what you need to know. Both are lost. One is lost away from the house, and the other one is lost in the house, because neither of them are in relationship with their father. And so that's an important thing to know. And now when we read this story, here's what I'm asking of you this morning. I'm asking you to, number one, I want you to see what the father's heart's toward both his lost sons. And then the second thing is this, I want you to examine your heart. How are you towards the prodigal son? All right, and that's what I want us to do. So Luke 15, let's read verses 11 through 16. If I can get there. Verse 11, it says this, and he said, he being Jesus, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me, and he divided his property between them. Here's what you need to know. The younger son would get a third of the inheritance. The older son would get two-thirds. That's how it went. But to ask for your father's inheritance while your father is still alive, in that culture and in that day, here's what he said. Father, I wish you were dead. I don't want you. I want your stuff. And that's what he just said. Now, verse 13, it says, but yet the father gave him his inheritance. Verse 13, not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. So remember, sin promises freedom at the beginning and it leads to bondage. Verse 14, and when he had spent everything he had, a severe famine arose in the country and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into the fields to feed the pigs. If you know anything about Jewish culture, that pigs were the most unclean animal. Archaeologists to this day, if they go to an area and they find no pigs' bones in the region, they realize Jewish people lived in that area, okay? And so that's how foul it was. And then it says in verse 16, and he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. No one gave him anything. And so we can see that he comes to this moment and he's laying down in the muck and the mire and he's like, how did I get here? How did this happen to me, right? And then we're going to find out. Verse 17, it says this, but when he came to himself or he repented, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? Verse 18, I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. And so now the crowd's waiting. And so now the son's coming back, and everyone in the audience knows what's going to happen. In Jewish culture, they had this thing. It was called the Kazaza ceremony. And so if you went and you lost all your goods to the Gentiles and you tried to come home again, here's what they did. The father would run out with a clay vase and he would smash it before his son and it would shatter, making this noise, drawing all the other elders that were around, and they would say, you are cut off from this family and from your people. It was the Kazaza ceremony. And that what was heading the son know he was coming home to that. But little plot twist, dun dun dun. That's not what happens. All right, let's look at this. He says this in verse 20, and when he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and he felt compassion. That word literally means he felt a pain in his guts when he saw his son. It says this: he ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. See, not what we expected. And everyone would have gasped in that audience. And here's So we're talking about God. What kind of father is God? And parents, I don't know if you can relate to this, but I've shared a version of the story, but I can remember as taking one of my younger children, and we were driving from Detroit to North Bay, Ontario, and it's like an 8-hour drive. So it's a cruise, and we got my little infant daughter in the back, and she's just fussy and crying, if you know what I mean. And so we stopped at this place called Tim Hortons. It's the promised land of donuts. Very amazing. And so we go, and we just threw a donut back to my girl, and that seemed to do the trick for like 30, 40 minutes. And so she's doing that until suddenly she started blowing up again, crying and just out of control. And we're like, we need to get a service center. And so we pull over and we do that. And I get into the back and I go to scoop out my daughter, who's just beside herself in tears. And then I pick her up and then I get a whiff of something. And then I realize, I'm like, oh, and then I just realized there's like stuff on me. And when I say stuff, please understand what I'm saying. And it was on me. And then it was, I was like, like this, and just holding the baby out like this. And then my wife like looks at me in disgust, and she grabs our sobbing daughter that I'm holding out like this. And she takes a blanket and she scoops up my daughter. She holds her in her arms and starts taking her. And she says, come on, mommy's going to get you cleaned up. Takes her into the restroom. Right? And so, can I just tell you, God ain't like me. All right? You can just repeat after me, God is like Susan. Okay? But that's what you need to know, that God scoops us up in our mess. He doesn't say, hey, wait a minute, you go clean up. No, it says, in his muck and in his filth, the father ran, and he wouldn't stop sobbing and kissing his son. And that's how God receives the sinners. And then he goes on, and listen, I wish you would stop there, but it doesn't. Let me read to you verse 25. Says this. It says, now his older son was in the field. And as he came in, he drew near to the house, and he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he's received him back safe and sound. Now get this. But he was angry, and he refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, look, these many years, and now he begins to throw out his resume of all he's done for his father. These many years, I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. Verse 31, and he said to him, son, you're always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad that for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and he's found. And the lights go down and the story just ends. And we don't know what happened to the older brother. And do you know what didn't happen at the end of this story? When the father threw the party, no one went, of course, yes. Of course he did do that. No. And suddenly they realized they were able to see the ugliness of their own heart. And there was just crickets, and we didn't hear anything else. And did you notice what he begins to say? And listen, I've been guilty of this. How many have ever been guilty of believing that you can control God by your obedience? Hey, I did this, I did this, I did this, therefore you. I've done that with God often. And here's what you need to hear, and I need to hear this morning, is that sons and daughters don't work for a wage. We labor with the Father for our inheritance, that we have an inheritance with God, that everything you're doing and working on right now, it's yours. It's our inheritance. And all the other garbage one day is just going to be burnt up, and all things are going to be made new, and we've been working on our kingdom inheritance. And here's the last story. I'm going to ask Kim to come on up, is this. Did you notice that the father begs the son, the older brother, please come in? It says he entreats him. He begs him, Come on in. There's food. There's celebration. There's your brother. And most of all, your father is here waiting for you. He entreats him to come in, and he just never does. And then here's the kind of the takeaway for us. And so I was reading a story. The guy's name is Lieutenant Daniel Dawson. This is back in 1964. It was at the height of the Vietnam War. And Lieutenant Dawson was flying over Vietnam, and his plane was shot down during the war. And as the plane went down, reconnaissance could not find Lieutenant Dawson. And so they reported it to his family, and his brother Daniel got word that his brother had went down and they couldn't find him. And so you can read this in Time magazine. He sold everything he had, and he traveled halfway around the world to Vietnam. He landed in the middle of the jungle and just began to go throughout the jungle. And listen, there's a war being raged as he's in there. And you want to hear something crazy? Nobody took him as a prisoner. Nobody attacked him because they realized what he was doing, because he was passing out flyers. He says, "Have you seen my brother? Have you seen my brother?" And when the warring armies saw that, they know we don't mess with that. That's sacred. That's holy. And the, you know what they referred to him moving forward? They referred to him as the An-Em, or the brother. That's who is called, and that's who we need to be.
Thanks for joining us at Every Nation New Jersey, where our vision is to partner with God and people to transform the world one life at a time.